Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
I hope you know that this is a very difficult job, mm-hmm. for which you are totally wrong, and if you mess up, my head is on the chopping block.
Well, thanks for that vote of confidence. You know, porn is a hot-button issue for most people. Everyone seems to have an opinion, but very few of these opinions come from more than gut reactions. To remedy this, I've been bringing you periodic interviews with porn performers of note as part of the Sex Education podcast series, because I think it's important to hear from real people in the business before we decide where we stand on adult entertainment.
Who is that sad little person? Are we doing a before and after piece I don't know about?
I hope you're not referring to me. Today, I add to the list of porn luminaries who have already appeared on this show: Robert Black, Chris Yosef, Tony Buff, Luke Wilder, Madison Young, and Bruno Bond, as well as Lance Navarro. I have the pleasure of welcoming the oh-so-charming and refreshingly philosophical Connor Habib. If you know anything about gay smut, then I'm going to guess that you already know our guest and his body of work. And if you don't, you have a treat in store for you, because Connor is way more than what you see in his movies. He is here to add his unique voice to the ever-growing chorus of prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles that is this podcast series.
That's true. That's really what this multi-billion-dollar industry is all about anyway, isn't it? Inner beauty.
I think you're being facetious, but yeah, I think so. So be sure to visit Connor on his kick-ass site, which is cleverly named ConnorHabib.com. And from there, you will find his brilliant blog. And don't miss his Twitter feed. And look for all of these links in today's podcast posting. Before we begin, a word from our sponsor, the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack. For those of you who have never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight, thus the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin. And trust me, this stuff is aptly named because it's phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? Remember, if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these shows. Now, you can help underwrite this important sex-positive effort and jerk off at the same time. How great is that? Okay, on with the show. Holy cow, Connor Habib, welcome, and thank you for schlepping on over to DrDickSexAdvice.com. I'm honored to have such a distinguished member of the porn community join me for a chat in this, the Sex Education series.
Great. Thanks for having me.
And now that you're here, would you like to say hello to all the really nice people?
Hello, all you really nice people, however many of you there are.
And I'm going to go way out on a limb here and guess that there's also going to be a big load of big fat perverts out there in our audience, too. Would you like to say hello to them as well?
Yes, I'll say hello to the majority. Hi. How you doing?
Good, good, good. I include myself in that latter category, by the way. And they're some of my most loyal audience, so there you have it.
Yeah, good.
So I'm trying to think back to when I first discovered you and your online world, and I think it was through Twitter. I love following porn stars, and you all have such an exotic lifestyle. Is being an adult star as amazing as it appears to us mere mortals.
I don't think I have a really exotic lifestyle. And in fact, I've said before to people, like, you know, I mean, I might be different than a lot of other porn stars, but I spend a majority of the time by myself. I read and write a lot. And I think, you know, from the outside, if I didn't do porn, my life would probably look pretty boring. So
Well, it's a good thing that you're doing porn then, because...
Yeah, right, exactly.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have anything to talk about. No, actually, I think, you know, as exciting as your porn performances are, I'm actually more interested in your mind. People must tell you that all the time, huh?
I'm sick of people just wanting to see my...
Exactly. There you go. So, once I found you on Twitter, it was a snap to find you elsewhere on the net, and once I discovered ConnorHabib.com, I was hooked for sure. How long has this site and its companion blog been around?
That's been around, I guess, maybe for 2 years now. The site I put up, and then the blog is a little bit newer than that. Oh. But the blog actually probably gets more attention than the actual site, which
right,
is funny,
right,
but,
right.
You know, it's good.
Yeah. Well, you tweet about your blog postings and stuff, so maybe that draws more attention there, yes?
Yeah, and I also think that the the site itself is, it's more just photos and links to videos and that sort of thing. So, and it has a filmography, pornography-ography. And that's for people who are searching for me, you know, and want that resource. So, yeah.
And God knows, I never wanted to see any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I went immediately to your blog.
You just wanted the articles.
That's right, articles, yeah. And more articles. So let's begin our discussion by talking about you, the real you and the porn star. This is what you say about yourself on your site. He went to school for years and years and eventually taught at a few schools, but got worn out by the lack of spirituality and sexuality in academia. Both things, he reasoned, made the world go round, so why aren't they talked about in school? So he decided to be a porn star. All right. He's well aware of that being a porn star, like going to grad school for creative writing and organismic and evolutionary biology, is not what's commonly referred to as a practical decision. That's funny as all get out. And also powerful stuff. So you studied evolutionary biology. Can you tell us more about that? And how did you come to choose that?
Sure. I mean, I primarily studied organismic biology, which is a little different.
Although it's easy for you to say.
I let the evolutionary part in too, of course, because you can't study biology without studying evolution.
Unless you're a Christian, and then you can.
But then you have to contend with it,
yes.
Right? So I went. To school, I was admitted to the MFA program for creative writing at UMass, and one of the great things about that school is that you can take classes in any other program you want if you can get into it. So I wasn't formally admitted into the organismic and evolutionary biology, or OEB, maybe that'll be the easiest way to say it, the OEB program. Mm-hmm. But there was a scientist there named Lynn Margulies who is a really brilliant scientist. She's known for a lot of great discoveries, high prestige, won the every science award you can think of except the Nobel Prize. And she was married to Carl Sagan. That's how a lot of people know.
Oh, is that right? Interesting.
We'll see. That's the thing that piques people's interest. But so she was there, and I knew she was there, and I wanted to study with her. I'd always wanted to be a scientist, but never wanted to go through the training. So I just walked up to her and said, "Hey, I'm in the MFA program. Can I take one of your classes?" And she, you know, the first thing she said was, "What does this have to do with environmental evidence?" And then eventually, you know, she let me in, and I started taking these courses and started taking the doctoral seminars. And was totally out of my league and just sort of tried to absorb the language. And so I studied science, but I ended up studying a lot more history and philosophy of science. Rather than, because I wasn't doing lab work, although I did involve myself a little bit in some of the lab stuff that was going on, but not that much. And so that's how I got involved. To me, the two things seem very similar, writing and biology. I mean, they're both these descriptive systems that are really fascinated with the world. And so, yeah.
So it strikes me that you are as much a philosopher as a performer. Would you agree with that characterization?
Yeah, sure. It's funny how hesitant I am to say I'm a philosopher, but yeah, I mean, I think that that's true, sure.
Because you don't have to have written a philosophy book to be a philosopher, it doesn't seem to me.
Right, well, or it's sort of like, you know, the hesitancy of saying I'm an artist, you know, it feels kind of crummy to say it in a weird way. You know, I think about stuff a lot and I write about stuff a lot, and that's, you know, I suppose that in a sense makes me a philosopher, yeah.
Do you suppose that one part of you infuses the other? Are you more thoughtful and reflective because of your performances, and are your performances more powerful because you are thoughtful and reflective?
I wanted to be in porn because it was philosophically interesting to me. So, I mean, that, so the philosophy part powered this whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, from the outside, you know, porn seemed like such a radical, liberating thing that was sort of almost anarchistic in a way, a sort
yes,
of fuck
absolutely.
The status quo. And so that's one of the reasons why I was so interested in it. And also because it's just the questions it poses, like, you know, the fact that I do porn, when someone asks me what my job is and I tell them, it raises questions in them immediately.
Yes.
And it's a serious discussion. And that to me was always very exciting about it. And I mean, of course, I don't mean to shove aside all the erotic and sexual aspects of it that aren't quite as thinking, but that was what was really appealing to me about it. So that's how they meet.
Yeah. I felt the same way when I was shooting porn with my company Daddy O Productions here in Seattle. You know, it's such a radical sort of thing to do, not just philosophically, but politically, and there's people, I mean, nobody has, you know, a neutral thought about pornography, and I want to discuss that in a bit with you later. But right now, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about sex and spirituality, because you raised that in that little bio thing that I just read a little while ago. This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, and I rarely have an opportunity to have this conversation with others. I feel very passionately about the connection between spirituality and sexuality. I've spent my entire adult life trying to understand how and why these two fundamental human desires got torn asunder. I suspect that you are curious about this as well, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Any thoughts? Why the big disconnect?
Well, I mean, I first of all think that spirituality is probably divorced from most aspects of our life at this point in time. Even our spirituality is disconnected from religion. So,
yes.
I mean, I think it's no surprise that sex should be pulled away from it as well. But of course, what you're talking about is there's some sort of special special separation that happens with sex as opposed to anything else, and except maybe money, which is sort of strange. Spiritual people aren't supposed to be wealthy, in quotes. Supposed to, like, there's all sorts of problems with wealth and poor and poverty and stuff. But I'm not sure exactly how it came about, and we can't just blame Christianity. I think that that's where people go most often. They sort of blame, but
it's an obvious target.
it's an obvious target, but you could also very easily find, you know, the separation and sort of dismissal or disavowal of the body in Buddhism.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think, you know, and then you get the sort of other end of the spectrum where you have sort of celebration of the body in some neo-pagan traditions and that sort of thing. And I don't know if that's exactly right either. The body is definitely a special place, and sex is a special aspect of the body. But I don't know if, you know, how much celebration it deserves or doesn't deserve. It's a really complicated question.
Right. It just seems to me that until we reconnect these two things in ourselves, neither we as individuals or us as humankind will be whole or wholesome. And that's why I've spent all my adult life trying to put these two things together, at least for myself. You know, if other people, you know, glom onto, you know, what I've come up with, that's kind of gravy. But for me, it's really important.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest troubles is that, you know, I mean, everybody's body is so individual, right? I mean, everybody looks different. Everybody has like a different weird birthmark or deformity. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has a different way of being beautiful physically. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, the interaction with the body is going to be completely individualized. It's going to be so different for everybody. So trying to come to a collective answer about how the body and sex are supposed to intersect with spirituality is going to be very difficult, because we all have a very unique conception of our bodies and sex. So,
but everything about the popular culture tells us, you know, that there is just one, you know, way of being beautiful. It's, you know, one body type, one, you know, way of being in the world, and which causes, it seems to me, causes most of us, you know, problems, because as you just suggested, we don't fit. And so somebody's trying to sell us something, generally products or services, so that we can become what the ideal is presented.
Right. Although I do think that that's changing a bit.
Okay.
And I'm not sure. I mean, I'm going to use pornography as an example. And I'm not sure that pornography can stand in and represent all of culture, but it can represent at least one aspect of it. And mm-hmm. So, you know, people talk about that all the time, like, well, isn't porn making people want this kind of body and making people feel bad about their bodies in this or that way? And to me, historically, if you look at it, that's a really short blip of time where that was happening in pornography. I mean, if you look at porn in the 70s and early 80s, I mean, you just have these, you know, like, you have all different kinds of body types. And then now, you know, the sort of other bookend is now we're on XTube. Everybody is, you know, everybody's very different. And but there's all this what's called niche porn, but there's so much of it now, where it's older guys, or it's women who are heavier, it's whatever.
Yeah.
And so have this like blip in the late 80s, 90s, and, you know, early aughts, where it's this one kind of body. And I think that that was probably really deeply tied into a certain kind of economic framework and kind of thinking. So I think we might be pulling away from that. I'm not sure. That's porn, and that's not necessarily representative of, you know, Hollywood or you know, other visual media.
Right. I know that I feel really liberated writing and talking about sex, particularly in a culture that is so often sex negative. It's a pretty radical thing, as I mentioned before, and I have the wounds to show for it. I'll bet you do too.
I'm not sure if I do. I mean, I'm not trying to. I mean, I did. I guess I did, but they don't even seem like scars anymore. It's like I got past that pretty early. I mean, I wanted to be a porn star since I was like 11 years old. I mean, and so there was a certain point where my whatever sexual guilt I had just sort of like flipped over. I mean, it wasn't when I was 11, it was after that, but it was sort of like flipped over when I was an undergrad in college, and then I just stopped being bothered by it. And now it just seems so mostly just so right to me. That's not to say I don't have any conflicts about pornography or sex ever.
Yeah.
But the sex negativity is something that left me pretty early and pretty completely. Yeah.
That's good. But I mean, just standing in this culture, you know, doing, and you're very public about who you are and what you do, and you write about it in a, such a passionate and compelling sort of way that it must draw fire. Does it not? I mean, do people just say, oh, well, he's just so brilliant, and isn't he swell? And there's got to be detractors.
I haven't encountered that many.
Okay, I'm going to start writing in your blog. God damn it.
So one example is this guy. It's funny because I haven't talked to him personally yet, and I should. But, you know, I'm part of this spiritual and philosophical tradition called Anthroposophy. And we can maybe talk about that later and maybe not. But it's a very complex system. And, you know, one of the things that's happened is sort of in that world, people have started to hear about this anthroposophical porn star. And I always was afraid that it was going to be problematic, but then all the anthroposophists that I met have been almost completely okay with it. And except, you know, it started spreading, and so there was this little viral thread online in Germany and in South America that was about that, about me. And someone who's sort of higher up in this community referred to me as a degenerate. And and I just thought, I'm not sure why. And, you know, I haven't talked with him yet. So there's a sense of sort of like some people's initial reactions might be like that. But as soon as we start talking, it seems to disappear. And I'm, I think, just blessed with being able to communicate well with people and communicate clearly and just assert, like, whether or not this is wrong, according to you, whether or not it's problematic, you have to also understand that I'm working out my own individuality, and this is the only way I know how to do it. And once you bring things down to that level, it sort of changes the conversation.
Well, so. I wish that my experience was as benign as yours, but it was not, and continues not to be. I mean, I was a Catholic priest for 20 years. 15 of those, I was being persecuted by the church for publicly identifying myself as gay and writing my doctoral thesis about the sexual attitudes and behaviors of gay Catholic priests in the active ministry back in 1981, before there was such a thing as gay priests, at least publicly. Yeah. And the shit hit the fan, and I've been, you know, vilified ever since. And my new book, Secrecy, Sophistry, and Gay Sex in the Catholic Church, came out in June, and, you know, I have detractors constantly, you know, approaching me. I'm both on my Dr. Dick site and the GayCatholicPriest.org site, you know, berating me for, you know, trying to wed this thing that they think is not to be wed at all. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's interesting that you say from both sides. I mean, first of all, I want to say that people like you who have come before me have made the experience more benign for me. I mean, a lot of people have done a lot of work before I became a porn star. So it's changed a lot since then, partially because of the efforts of people who are willing to stand up before me. But I also think that it's interesting that you say it's from both sides. I definitely received more detractors for talking about spirituality than for being in porn, and particularly in the gay community.
Yes, oh yes.
I don't even really like the word gay community in relationship to it because it's so very
oxymoronic, first of all.
Yeah. But you know, everybody knows what I mean when I say that. So I think that's proven to be more of a point where I argue back and forth with people. And I mean, certainly, you know, surrounded by scientists, I couldn't talk about spirituality, you know. So it was also, it was also a weird...
Yeah.
I think more and more of that's been more of a battle I've had to fight.
Right. Interesting. You say about yourself, in his own way, he is trying to make the world a better place. I think so too. I don't know you hardly at all except through your writing and your videos, but I think so. And that pretty much flies in the face of what most people think about porn and those who perform in it. And I love that you are challenging us to rethink our preconceived notions about sex, sexuality, and public displays of these things.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of a shame that we've lost him, but David Mamet said something really wonderful to this effect, and now he's, you know, just gone off the deep end and become completely bonkers. But he did say this really beautiful thing in an essay a long time ago about someone who's an outsider to society. A lot of times their purpose is to elicit and demand complete compassion from everybody else in the society to be understood. So in other words, to even be who he is sort of a demand on society. And so I think of that too. It's like, as being an outsider to almost all the communities that I'm in one way or another, you know, being the spiritual scientist, the scientific spiritual person, the gay porn star in academia, you know, the whatever, it demands a radical act of understanding from people that I encounter. So I have to be very clear. And so that, I think, just being who you are, if you're an outsider, can sometimes make the world better.
I think so too. I totally agree. And the fact that you're putting all of these things together inside of you and demanding that people take another look and not dismiss you out of hand, I think that's what makes us kindred spirits. And, you know, it's always nice to find such a thing in our world.
Yeah. Thank you.
How did you get your start in porn?
Well, I did sort of weird, I mean, weird path. I mean, I had some false starts where when I was younger, I was contacted by some companies and nothing ever came of it. But, you know, it definitely deepened my interest and my seriousness about doing it. And then when I was, I think, 29, someone who's directing movies, this guy John Bruno, who is, he's an awesome guy, but I don't know if he's making movies anymore. He contacted me and asked me if I'd be interested. This is when I lived in Massachusetts. It didn't happen, but then I moved out to California and he was sort of here waiting for me. But I also did a commercial for a bathhouse called Steamworks. They auditions, and I got the part for the audition. I did the commercial, and then the people who filmed that owned a porn company, and so I did a porn for them, and then nothing for a long time, and then sort of took off a while after that. It's not that exciting of a story, I'm afraid.
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, it's not like I was discovered at, like, you know, like I was at
Schwab's,
and some porn director said, he looked great. Yeah, no, it was nothing like that.
Is Connor Habib your stage name?
Yeah.
How did you come to choose it? Or did someone else choose it for you?
No, Connor, I'm half Irish and half Syrian.
No kidding.
There might be a little something more than just Irish in there, but it's mostly Irish, and then the other half is totally Syrian. And so I, you know, I wanted something that was both, and Connor is, I was in Ireland when I was 14 years old, and I was at a pub. It was the first time I ever drank, and these two guys were like dry humping each other, these two straight guys, and one kept going, O'Connor, O'Connor, O'Connor. And, you know, totally heterosexual at this point, as far as I know. I don't know what the hell's going on. And, like, you know, I just start going berserk. I'm like, what is going on? You know, I was so turned on. And Connor was also the name of my kindergarten teacher, who was also the wrestling coach, Mr. Connor. And Habib means in Arabic, beloved one or sweetheart. Or
no kidding.
So that's where that comes from.
I love it. I, absolutely love it. I got to name some of the people who starred in the Daddy-O productions and with their help, and it was a wonderful kind of thing. And sometimes they owned it and they thought it was great, and sometimes they went and changed their name afterwards. But it was kind of an interesting thing. I'm always fascinated by people who choose their own names, and a lot of people, like in the fetish world and whatnot, have their lifestyle names, and I'm always very curious about how they come to have them. So,
yeah, it's become sort of a weird issue in my life too, because as I've been publishing more and more work with other people, not just on my blog, it's become a weird decision about whether or not to use my birth name or my porn name. And I think at some point I'm just going to have to really blend them together, right, and just sort of have both, and everybody will know both,
right,
because I never really intended to hide my name. It was more like, well, Connor Beebe is sort of like the band name.
Yeah.
It's like the name for this project.
Right.
And, but now, I don't know, it's a really tricky place for me to be in. I'm trying to figure it out still.
Oh, interesting. I think it's fascinating. Do you have a speciality in your video work, or are you pretty versatile?
I think I'm pretty versatile. I think that might be why I've gotten as much work as I've gotten. They're just like, oh yeah, he'll do whatever. Just throw him in.
Any fetish work or niche genre work in your background? And if so, could you give us some information about that?
I'm afraid I'm painfully vanilla. I've done stuff, which is a good name for like a high school punk band. I've done a lot of different stuff in movies. In my personal life, I'm very slow and mostly slow and passionate sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
During sex. But I wish I would be put in more movies with older guys, or like glory holes or group scenes, that kind of stuff. I really like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I sort of just do what they ask me to do.
Right. Because they're paying the bill, don't you know?
And I've said no to things, too. It's not, you know,
right.
I don't want to just say I'm at, like, at the whims, and I think anybody who wants to be in porn should really develop a strong sense of the word
good for
no.
You.
Yeah.
Great wisdom there, don't you know? Because those who don't, you know, are taken advantage of really quickly, it seems to me, because there's such unscrupulous people in the industry. But there are unscrupulous people in the church, too. So, I've heard folks in the industry speak of you as fitting the guy next door type. I have two questions. Is that an accurate representation? And if so, do you cultivate that persona?
I don't know. I would be the last person to know if I was like the guy next door or not. I mean,
who lives next door to you?
I'm not sure. Yeah, right. Exactly.
In a Castro, in San Francisco.
The guy
what?
In the Castro. That means absolutely nothing. That's like, oh, you know, that could mean I have a zipper mask on 12 hours a day. Or it could mean, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure. I wish I could give you a better answer for that, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
If I don't really know. I mean, I don't feel like, let me just put it this way, I don't really feel like the guy next door, in the sense that, I mean, I really do spend so much time reading and writing that that's always made me feel sort of like outside what the guy next door would be. It always makes me feel a little lonely, in a productive way sometimes and in a good way sometimes. But, you know, I don't feel like just like everybody else all the time, you know.
But in the land of the hyper buff, over stylized manscaping and hairless bodies, you stand out as having a wonderfully natural body, and you actually maintain your body hair. Are you ever pressured to do otherwise?
I've definitely been pressured to do steroids by studio people.
Yeah.
And that was really uncomfortable.
Yes.
I didn't. I obviously.
Good for you.
You know, I had someone tell me that I was fat once, and you know, just getting you know, I'm not, I weigh 155 pounds, I'm not fat, but it doesn't feel good to have someone tell you when you're about to take your clothes off in front of them. Right. And even if I were, it's like, well, then, what, you know, you have me here, you asked me to come here, what are you feeling that you need to tell me that? So, yeah, I mean, I just tried to be myself and get, I mean, I would say, you know, I do get in a little better shape than I would if I weren't in porn. I mean, if I weren't doing porn, it would definitely be pastries every day. But on the other hand, the thing that's been really great for me, which I think people don't really think about, I haven't done steroids and I haven't done some of the things that other people do to get in shape, like all these like protein shakes and all that kind of bullshit. But it has taught me discipline with my body, and that's actually been an honor. It's been an honor to experience my body in a way where I meditate, I eat well, I go to the gym, you know, my heart feels strong, I almost never get sick. You know, everything about my body is much clearer and much purer now, and cleaner. And I think it's connected to me and my body in that way, but only because I've chosen not to do the things that a lot of people do to look a certain way for porn. So, yeah.
That's brilliant. And I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that our time is up for today, actually, over.
Okay.
but... You're so charming and so delightful, and I want more of you, if at all possible. Any chance you could come back next week and join us for more chat?
Sure thing. Definitely.
Yay! Yeah. You're so easy. I love it.
They all tell me.
Well, before we go, would you give us your website address and walk us around a little bit? Tell us what we can find there and where we can see your movies and where we can find your blog.
Sure. So the website is ConnerHabib.com, and it's ConnerHabib.com, and that just has that has photos from movies that I was in. It has a filmography, and if you click through to buy any of those movies or scenes from my website, then I get a little kickback, which is kind of, because porn stars don't make royalties. A lot of people don't know that. So the best way for a porn star to get money from a movie after it's out is through that, through people clicking through their site. The blog is ConnerHabib.wordpress.com.
And it links right from your site, too, yes.
And you can link from my site to that, yeah. And that will more... That has longer pieces. My blog is not really like just a, hey, today I went to the store and I got this. I like those kinds of blogs sometimes, but it's much more essayistic. It has longer pieces and sometimes links to a piece that's been published somewhere else or excerpts from that. And my Twitter is @ConnerHabib. So.
Cool beans. Well, until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace, so look for us.
Okay, great.
Thanks, kiddo. Bye.
Bye.
What a great show, huh? Well, tune in next week at this very same time for part two of my interview with Conor Habib and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
Well, you know me. Give me a full ballerina skirt and a hint of saloon and I'm on board.
That's the ticket. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. You know, all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse, well, here's a tip for you. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you like takes practice. Sure, you can learn to last longer simply by using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It's just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with a stamina insert, which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice with this puppy, you'll be able to last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with the endurance jack, you'll have all the skills that you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old US of A. And if you make your purchase by clicking on the Flesh Jack banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these shows. Now, you can underwrite this important sex-positive effort and pleasure yourself at the same time. How fun is that? Okay, until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.